Hello, friends. It's your old pal, Ariel Helwani, back with another episode of DC and Helwani. And boy, do we have a lot of things to discuss this week. Brian Ortega 2.0, McGregor Poirier coming together, UFC 254, Khabib Gaethje this weekend, and so much more. But before we get to all of that, as you probably know, the World Series is finally set. How about those LA Dodgers? I love LA. They came back to beat the Braves in seven games on Sunday. Incredible. And so now we get the Dodgers and the Rays. You know what else is amazing? Baseball Tonight. The Baseball Tonight podcast airs every single day, and it is hosted by the great Buster Olney. And he has guests on every single podcast, which airs every single day, and they will break down the World Series matchup between the Dodgers and the Tampa Bay Rays. If you want to check it out after you're done listening to DC and Helwani, of course, remember, you can download and subscribe to Baseball Tonight wherever you find your favorite podcast. All right, now on to today's program. And as always, listener discretion is advised. Enjoy.
Now making their way to the microphone, DC and Helwani.
Come on, man. I don't believe that, man. One thing I can't believe. I've accepted all the stuff you throw my way, but there's no way I'm ever going to celebrate Canadian Thanksgiving.
Here's Daniel Cormier and Ariel Helwani.
In your life on this third week of October 2020. Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to a brand new edition of DC and Helwani. That's DC, Daniel Cormier. I'm Helwani, Ariel Helwani, and we are back to talk about a lot of things going on in the world of MMA. And look at this guy. You know, I'm actually surprised. I'm surprised that we actually got an hour of your time, because you just seem to be living your absolute best life over there in Abu Dhabi, DC. Well, thank you for joining us for an hour or so.
I'm living pretty good. If I say so myself, I'm living pretty good. You know, there's one negative. Obviously, I'm not around my children and my beautiful wife, Selena. Sure. You know, you just said that you think that I'm in the dog. Also, my wife, Selena. But outside of this, like, I'm living good. I get to sleep. I get to sleep more. I get to play video games. I get to watch fights. I mean, you saw me on Saturday night. I mean, I was rocking and rolling. I'm living my best life.
You were on fire Saturday, but before we get to Saturday, I mean, it's funny that you went through the list of things that you're doing over there, playing video games, like just notch. I mean, I think that you're playing, you know, video games for 20 hours a day. It's amazing. The past week has just been like, what is DC doing now on social media? Where can I find, which Instagram story can I find you on? Is it Michael Chiesa's Instagram story? Are you talking trash about video games? Is it Khamzat Chimaev's? Is it Eddie Chaz? I mean, you're just like the mascot of Fight Island. That's what you've become.
I have finally made it to Fight Island, and now Fight Island's even better for it, right? The arena, when I walked into the arena, it all of a sudden had a big time championship vibe. Right. I brought all those main events with me from the U.S. over to Fight Island. And now that I've hit this hotel, I mean, they brought me confetti in the morning. Bang. Because like you said, I think they may have might not known that I was here. But then when they heard us doing the show, they were, oh, DC's there. They didn't recognize my name. But now they've been bringing me gifts every morning. Every morning I get a gift, you know, so I'm living my best life. And it's been fun. It has been fun.
Well, before we get to all of that, you know, I'd be remiss if I don't start out by wishing you and your family a very happy Monday. It is just
Monday. Oh, thank God. I was nervous.
It's just Monday. But
I was nervous. Ariel, I was nervous. Every time you say I'd be remiss if I didn't, I start to panic. I get this like feeling inside of my stomach like I'm about to laugh because this dude's about to get another holiday. So, there's a week where you guys don't have a holiday.
This is a holiday-free week. We're back to business. But I did notice the W over there in Abu Dhabi. They did feel bad, right? Because I called them out for not giving you the message on the mirror, for not giving you the confetti. You got a gift in your hotel room. What was that note? What was that note that they sent to you?
The note said, wait, what note?
They wrote something like,
you can retire. You can't retire from being like, awesome. Yeah, you can't retire from being awesome. But listen, there's one on my door. Hey, there's one on my door right now because they taped something on my door too. It said, we have a legend in the house. It said retired and has plenty of retired and knows everything and has plenty of time to tell you about it. You know, like I'm retired. I know absolutely everything. And I've got all the time in the world now to tell you about how smart I am.
Wait, so now so everyone knows that's your room. That's a rest.
It's my room, but it's okay. It's okay.
That's a bullseye.
I don't get random now.
Was that? That they wrote knows everything. That's a, they can't, they probably spelled it K-N-O-W-S, but that was sort of a nod to me since I'm not there.
So you called the hotel.
I didn't want it to make it too obvious because I don't want a real bullseye on you, but that's why they wrote knows everything. Do you get it? It's sort of like a nod.
I appreciate you, my brother. We're always looking out for each other.
Yeah, you know.
You asked me, but I figured I would save it for the big one.
Oh,
right. I'm saving it for the pay-per-view. You know, okay. I didn't want to drop your name on the fight night when they have a pay-per-view the week after. So you're in there.
What's going on with the video games? Why are you playing video games? Oh, first of all, a week ago, you had never even heard of the Korean Zombie. Then like 10 minutes after the show, I had heard
of the Korean Zombie.
Nah, I mean, let's
now, you're doing it again. You're doing that thing you do. The Korean Zombie, I had heard of him. But I did not know of that t-shirt. But then when I talked to the Korean Zombie for the first time, oh man, he's got that, he's kind of got that aura about him. I'm telling you. And then Eddie Cha's fantastic. I love Eddie Cha. And Eddie Cha thinks he's the best at video games. So now I take it as a challenge. You know, I've been beating on Eddie all week. I beat him all week. I beat everybody. And look, I'm charging Zach and everybody else. You want to come to my room and play my video game? It's a $20 video game fee. It's an arcade fee. You pay me $20 to get to play with the sticks all week. And then every game you pay $10 to $20 per game to play against me. So I'm over here just collecting. Ariel, look, hey, I'm out here getting money, baby.
Wow.
I'm out here getting money on these dudes, man. I'm out here hustling, Ariel. Look, I'm out here hustling. I got the PlayStation. No, they don't beat me. I beat them in MMA. I beat John Wood in MMA.
John Wood, right?
John Wood's a good guy. The coach at Syndicate held pads for me. I beat him up all the time in MMA. I beat Eddie Cha in basketball constantly. Then he tried, we'll only play NBA 2K20. He's trying to make excuses, but he can't help himself. The other day he came, I had my robe on. I put on Teddy Pendergrass. Like, hey, I was waiting for you, baby. He come to play again and take some more of his money. And then I'm beating Zach and all them other dudes in every other game I can find. So I'm out here making money on.
Well, I'm enjoying watching it. And then I see you finally getting to meet your favorite fighter of all time. Like the look in your eyes. It was just like, if I meet, you know, Patrick, you and Khamzat finally in the same room. Yeah, you were so excited to be in his presence. You start wrestling with him. So what was that like to be in his presence? To touch and feel.
I was like, okay, let me just feel. Let me just see what this is all about, right? So I grabbed the Khamzat. Right, I grabbed
Khamzat. You call him the Khamzat now?
Yeah, I go to his leg. Because, you know, like, right, the reality is, like, when you like somebody, right, you got to kind of be like, oh, I don't want to really just go up to him. But me, I can't, right? So I just go and I grab him by the collar, you know, underhook him. He starts wrestling immediately. Challenges me to a wrestling match, which we never got to do our training. But, yeah, he felt strong. He's long. But he's got that flimsy Russian feel. You know, the Russians have this ability to feel strong, but feel like they're not giving a lot of effort, which is cool. But super nice dude. I sat and had dinner with him and a couple of the other guys, Rizvan and those guys. We talked for over an hour just about all kinds of stuff. It was awesome. It's been great.
Did you get his autograph?
Come on, man. Now you see what you're doing here? You're doing it again. Again, you're doing it. It's like you can't help yourself.
What? Like, help myself what? You love the guy.
I'm not going to ask anybody. I don't ask anybody for their autograph. Like, why are you trying to make it seem as if I'm, can I have your autograph?
You're walking up with a picture.
You act like I'm walking up with a picture of Khamzat and going, hey, can you sign this for me? Like, come on, Ariel. Like, come on, man. This is crazy. Like, why do you do that?
I just love when you say, come on, man. Come on, man.
Like, I mean, that's what I'm saying, Ariel. Like, come on, man. Like, you.
Listen, I saw the look in your eyes. Can I just say the video games, riding the bike, the hitting of the pads.
I did ride the bike.
I mean, you just seem to be, you're loving it over there. Do you want to go home or are you just going to stay?
Well, yes, I do want to go home. But I mean, you got to distract yourself, right? Today, I saw sunlight for the first time. because on Saturday the fights are normal time here. So I got to get up during the day. So, yeah, I was up today during the middle of the day, the afternoon.
So are you now going to rearrange your sleep schedule? Because the zombie fight was for us, but now the 254 card is like prime time in Abu Dhabi. So now you got to change everything, right?
Yeah, I got to try. At least I have to try. So last night I tried to rush to the switch. So last night I fell asleep at like 4 in the morning, slept till like 8, woke up, took another nap or a couple naps over the course of the day. And now I have to try to go to bed tonight, but it's not going to be easy because now I only have a week to try to readjust. And then next week I got to go back to our schedule back at home, or I'm going to be the one on the overnight shifts with baby Luna. So it's been an up and down trying to figure out how to get this whole time change addressed.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk about this past Saturday. You were there your first time calling the events from the now infamous Fight Island, and we must give Brian Ortega his due. What a performance. Brian Ortega 2.0. Holy smokes. Completely different fighter. 22 months after his last fight, his loss to Max Holloway, by far the worst loss of his career, the only official loss at the time of his career. And here he is coming out there and beating Zombie at his own game, a much improved striker with a new team in his corner, everything changed. And, oh, by the way, new hair. I mean, it was just a completely different guy. I was blown away, and I feel now, take back what I said last week, DC. Last week I said, yeah, even if he wins, you don't get a title shot after just coming off a title fight and then win one fight back. No, I think he deserves the title because he's a completely different fighter and he rearranged everything. He has evolved into a new man. I was blown away by what Brian Ortega did. What about you?
The one thing about Brian Ortega that has not changed is he still is mean. Boy, he is an angry, angry human being. He thinks that everybody hates him, and it fuels him. And that's okay because that worked for certain guys. But he pitched a shutout in a fight where he had to stand the whole time, which is exactly what we thought he couldn't do, right? We thought that if he was to win this fight, he would need the fight to be on the ground. But instead, it was 25 minutes of stand-up, and he just dominated. And I never saw it coming. And, you know, when Dana said the winner gets a title shot, I was kind of thinking, oh, well, they must think that the Korean Zombie is going to win the fight and he's going to get a title shot because Brian Ortega just lost a championship fight. But
who's there? Who's in your room right now? What's happening?
Somebody just knocked on the door. They just knocked on the door and said room service. I haven't ordered room service. I promise I will never eat on this show. You guys don't need to see that. But Brian Ortega promised a new version of himself. And, man, he absolutely delivered. He over-delivered on his promise because his striking looked sharp. He looked so calm and collected. He never rushed. He was faking takedowns and coming up to strikes. He told us in the fighter meeting how much he hated wrestling, right? He hated wrestling offensively because he knew that if he got taken down, he was okay off of his back. But by adding in the wrestling, it added a completely different approach to his fight. He started slapping at the Zombie's legs, and Zombie had to respect it because he grabbed his legs a couple times. You're right. He should be fighting for a title. And he presents a lot of unique problems for the champion, Alexander Volkanovski.
And we'll get to that in a second. But, you know, historically in the fight game, when you're off for almost 2 years, when you're coming off the worst loss of your career up until that point, when you change your whole team, the team that brought you to that title fight, and you change everyone. Henry Gracie was the lone, guy who stayed with him, but Survivor. He wasn't even in his corner. Yeah, he wasn't even there. He was back home because he tested positive for COVID. You shave your hair, and I respect the decision to donate the hair, but, you know, did he shave it? Did he do it to help him make the weight? And now as a result, who knows? The bottom line is good. All those things combined, though, DC, I was like, oh, man, this is not good. Plus, Zombie has been looking so good as of late, right? Historically, Ortega doesn't win that fight, right? The guy in Ortega's shoes or in his gloves doesn't win that fight, and that's why I was just blown away. And you nailed it, the patience, right? The way he was striking, the jab. We haven't seen that from Brian Ortega. This is a jiu-jitsu guy striking like that. Woo. Well, I was impressed.
Well, it's all those things that you just listed are scary, right? Because you go, wow, this guy lost. Now he's panicking, right? He's blowing up the whole thing. The whole ship has now sunk because where are his coaches? All these people that put all this time and effort into him. Why does one loss change the entire approach? Generally, guys lose like that. The warning signs are getting rid of your team, changing weight classes when things starts to go bad. All those different things usually means that you're in for a rough outing. But Brian Ortega showed that he made the right decision because, man, he put on a performance that I never could have expected from that jab, right? That's one of the things they always say. When you're fighting southpaw conventional, it's very difficult to throw the jab. Brian Ortega had no problem landing his jab. He controlled the foot placement, and as he controlled the placement, boom, he was popping the jab. He landed that beautiful spinning elbow. I told Dan Hardy and John Gooden, I said, for the Korean Zombie to defend these types of attacks from Yair Rodriguez for 24 minutes and 55 seconds before he got the up elbow, that's to be expected, right? Because you know when you fight Yair Rodriguez, he's going to be doing all that spinning stuff. He did not one time during camp try to prepare for a spinning attack from Brian Ortega because it was something that we had never seen before. But now Brian Ortega has all those things in his arsenal too, which again just makes him even more dangerous. Because if he's so good in the stand-up, and you know that if you go to the ground, you're always in danger, how do you approach a fight with Brian Ortega now? Mm. It's like it's a complete mind, you know, it's a mind game now as to how you approach a fight against that guy when he's so dangerous everywhere.
Our good friends over at ESPN MMA, the Instagram account, posted a video of him and Tiki, his manager slash, you know, I guess training partner, Tiki Gosen, former UFC fighter, in the back. And they were practicing that elbow. And then he nails the exact same one in the fight. So they were working on that. They saw it coming. I'm just curious, as someone who hung on, you know, to the island for so long, how do you feel about a guy with locks like that shaving him? What do you think? Do you like the new?
Oh, he's going back, right? I don't know how long his hair is, right? I've never really.
It's pretty long.
I once tried to shave my head to make weight at a wrestling tournament in high school, and it weighed like an ounce. Like, and I had an afro, and it was like, I was like, well, it won't weigh much. But Brian Ortega, if he has long hair, someone said it's down to his butt. Like, it might actually weigh something. And if he had to take off a little bit of weight, but he said he was very emotional. He had thought about doing it for a long time. And he said, in that moment, he said, I'm cutting it right now. Bring me the Clippers. And you know what? If that's what he says, that's what we have to accept as fact, because ultimately it worked out for him. Because if he had such a terrible weight cut, how did he perform at that level over 25 minutes at that pace?
He looked good. He was feeling good. He pitched a shutout, as you said, 5-0. He reminded everyone that he's the man and all that stuff. And he was feeling so good. This was my favorite part. He was feeling so good that he thought he could just nail the one answer walk off. Yeah. But DC said, boy, you better come back here. I got
get
more
over
questions.
Here. You remember Scorpion on Mortal yeah. Kombat? Get over here. Like,
I grabbed that arm. So
I had direct instructions to get the interview. And hey, yes. That's a good interview.
Such a great journalist.
But I'm going to say this. That was a good interview. But I can't say that all night I had the best in-octagon interviews. You know, I had a ton of translators. It's difficult. When you got translators, it's hard, man. So getting an American guy in there, guy that speaks English, I don't have to put the mic to a third guy. I was like, let me get this moment with you, Brian. Come back, you know. And honestly, by him staying, he gave two more great answers, right? So that would have been great, right? The walk-off would have been cool. But if he got to get off two more good answers that got used for clips over and over, it was fantastic.
I mean, you did him a great service. I was hoping ESPN MMA would put together a highlight reel of all your post-fight interviews.
That was a few. There was
Saeed,
a few on Saturday.
Hey, Saeed, let's go, Saeed. Interview time. Focus.
Saeed, come on, Saeed. What are you doing? Saeed's excited, right? Saeed, it's interview time. You're shaking everybody's hand. Dude's got four corners. Saeed, we don't have all day. You got to get over here and do the interview.
Jonathan Martinez.
I knew this was going to happen, but hey, the shot you don't take, you can't make it, right? Like, I'm out here. I'm shooting like KB. I mean, I'm trying, man, but I've had two moments in the octagon where I've had to do that to try to – and it was that one. And also Colby Covington, when he beat Damian Maia in Brazil, that was one where I felt like I was just like his manager almost – because it was so loud and just raucous. But that was a good one. Brian Ortega one was it was good to get him and get those extra answers out of him.
There was another one, too, where you told the guy, let's go, or something like that. You were just on fire. Unfortunately, you did have one mishap where you walked right into the camera.
Bro.
It was just like, what?
That
every fight, I was looking – You walked up three times. I saw that clip once. Three that times on Saturday?
That happened three times on Saturday. So the camera guy, I was turning off to my right, and bumping the camera like multiple times. First time, not a big deal. Second time, not a big deal. Third time, it hit me in the face, right? So then I go, stop standing so close to me. Like they took the view off of me, but I was like cussing in there like, yo, you got to stop standing so close to me. It was just the third time you hit me with the camera. And then I go out of the octagon, but then come to find out, guess whose fault it was? It was my fault. I'm supposed to go behind the fighter once we're done. I'm not supposed to just turn and go back out of the octagon. I mean, hey, the closest way to get from point A to point B is in a straight line. So I don't know why I got to loop a circle. But yes, I got to loop the circle to go around and get out of the octagon. But yeah, three times I ran into the cameraman. So good guy, too. The guy that was doing it, he's a great guy. Like, I've known him for a long time. He worked with the UFC for the longest time. And that was probably the most, contentious interaction we've ever had. You know, like, I was like, hey, stop standing so close to me with the camera. He's like, well, I'm trying to get as close to the fighter as I can. I was like, is there no Zoom? Like, is there no Zoom? Like, there's, you know, like, it was enough. Enough was enough. It's fun, though.
People loved it. Everyone was sending me that clip. I didn't know it happened three times. I just saw it once, but it was tremendous. Back to Brian Ortega, Alexander Volkanovski, the featherweight champ. He's very happy because he says, all right, now I got direction. Now I have a fresh opponent, right? It's not Max Holloway.
Can I ask you a question, though? Can I ask you one question about this?
Sure.
Right? Isn't it amazing how Brian has fought so well to put himself back in this position, right? One fight. But, like, what happened to Zabit? Like, what in the world is going on with Zabit Magomed Sharipov? Sure, what happened to Zabit? Like, what happened? Like, all of a sudden, Zabit just isn't, like, in the running for a title shot anymore? I don't understand what happened.
Well, he was supposed to fight Yair in late August. Yair got the high ankle sprain. And then I think he was campaigning for a title shot, and they wanted to try to get him someone else. They couldn't find. He said, you know, I think Calvin Kattar was campaigning. Didn't make sense. He has a win over Calvin Kattar. But unfortunately, he hasn't fought since, off the top of my head, November of last year when he fought in Russia.
So inactivity is what inactivity
I agree with you. I wouldn't be upset if Zabit got it, but I think Ortega doing that to Zombie in the main event, this game, this is the same thing. By the way, I was not to get on this train, but I was just telling that to Leon Edwards' manager last week. I was like, just take anyone at this point. Just fight.
Yeah.
This sport is like you fight, even if the opponent isn't a top 10 guy, everyone goes gaga over you.
They
forget about the past, you know, few months, and now all of a sudden you're back. It doesn't even matter who you fight anymore. It's just a matter of winning, getting on the microphone, getting people crazy, and now you're the man again. So that's what happened with Ortega, and that's why we're not talking about Zabit.
I was looking at the rankings all last week as I was preparing, and I kept seeing, like, Ortega 2, Holloway, or Holloway 1, Ortega 2, Zombie was 4, but there was Zabit, and, like, we never mentioned him the entire week. I was like, well, what happened to Zabit? Like, is he hurt? Is there a reason why he's not one of those guys that we're even talking about for a championship fight? And now, after what Brian Ortega did last week, he's the number one guy, clearly. So it's it's what have you done for me lately type of sport, and Zabit's been away. But, yeah, that really did make me go, I mean, this guy's undefeated. And he's won all of his fights. Like, why is he not in contention for the title?
I think he's one away. But I do want to ask you about Volkanovski very quickly. I know you don't make predictions, but that matchup, who do you fit? Don't make a prediction. I don't want to put you in the doghouse. I don't want you to get, you know, any heat with anyone. But who's got the edge going into that? Ortega 2.0 or Volkanovski, in your opinion?
I mean, the new Ortega is a handful, right? Because, you know, Alexander Volkanovski wants to take you down when he can and control and dictate the pace and pressure. I don't know, man. I mean, for him to beat Holloway in the way that he's done twice or once, you know, however you want to call it, or zero, the fights have been so close. But even if him and Max were just that close, that's way closer than anybody has been with Holloway for a really long time. So you got to give the champ some credit, man. I feel like I haven't done him justice because he's been fighting Max for so long, and Max is such a close friend of mine. And I speak to his skills, but I have not been able to put him over to the level that he should be, because the guy is an absolute hammer and a stud. And I think we have to respect him as such, because if you got to be honest, Brian Ortega 2.0 was what it was going to have to be in order to even compete with Max Holloway, because you saw that the first version of Brian Ortega wasn't even on the same level. So he needed to level up to compete with Max Holloway. So him leveling up essentially puts him on the same playing field as Alexander Volkanovski, who holds, you know, those wins over Max.
Volkanovski might be the most underrated champion in the UFC today.
Yeah, it's sad.
And I'm curious to see what Ortega does now with a second training camp with this new team and if he gets that much better. But I would still give the edge right now to Volkanovski just because he's so good and he's defeated a who's who at 145 pounds. You know who else is the woman – not the man, the woman, is Valentina Shevchenko. Valentina Shevchenko is the woman at 125. And finally, DC, you know, no one talked about Jessica Andrade going to 125 leading up to this card on Saturday because it was all about Zombie and Ortega and somewhat rightfully so. But she finished Caitlin Chookagian, who is a super tough out. She now moves up to 125, may have found the sweet spot between 135 and 115. She's the first woman in UFC history to win now in three different weight classes. She's a bulldozer. She's a beast. Finally, I think Valentina, I'm not saying she beats Valentina. And of course, Valentina fights Jennifer Maia on November 21st. But if she wins that fight, honestly, I think I might even put Jessica in there right away, right? Like she's done enough. She's a former champ. I'd love to see that fight.
Ariel, I'm telling you, man, I was kind of like, after watching that, I was like, Jessica Andrade is the fight right now. But again, we can't forget what Jennifer Maia did to, at the time, the number one contender in Joanne Calderwood. Was it Joanne Calderwood?
Yeah.
Right? So we get a bit ahead of ourselves. But what Jessica Andrade did the other day, 135, she was too small, right? She was big and strong. She was a tank. She still fought as hard as she did. 115, she was cutting a lot of weight. She said she had a completely eliminated strength training, right? She was doing no lifting. But if you saw her on Saturday, she's back lifting. Bro, her traps in her, like her lower half, her legs, she looked like an absolute monster. Like she's so strong. She went after Caitlin Chookagian, who is someone that's very difficult to get to, right? Most times she fights at range. She's popping her jabs. She's moving. And people can't corner her. Jessica grabbed her right away and threw her down, just like she throws everybody down. And then she threw her down again. And then, man, when they were fighting against the side of the octagon, Chookagian was in southpaw. Most times you see body kicks from the outside, the opposite split stance. She threw that uppercut, and she found the liver. Even though, generally, I'm throwing to the liver with my left hand, right? Conventional fighter. She threw a right hand and brought it all the way across and cracked Chookagian. And what was most important about that, Ariel, was at the end when Chookagian ran away, which was insane when you know how tough Caitlin is, right? She went and turned and ran. Mm. Could you imagine how hard you got to get hit in a fight to turn and run away? She turned and ran, and instead of just headhunting like most people would, she went right back to the body.
Yeah.
And she found that spot, that shot again, and Chookagian had no choice but to go down. She's real. And she's real dangerous at 125.
Yeah, I'd love to see. You know, Cynthia Calvillo was supposed to fight this weekend. Unfortunately, she tested positive. I don't know if you want to running it back.
No, listen.
Oh.
Cynthia Calvillo looked so good at 125 when she made her debut.
Yeah.
And who is she going to fight this weekend?
Why am I drawing a blank? She was going to fight Corporate Jake. Help me out. Lauren Murphy.
Lauren Murphy, right? And Lauren Murphy has looked good lately, too.
Yeah.
You got to find a way to get Cynthia Calvillo and Jessica together or get them fighting around the same time to see who hammers down the point that they're next.
I don't mind Cynthia and Lauren doing that later on, rebooking that, and just have Jessica fight the winner of Maia and Valentina. And if Maia pulls off the upset, you're probably giving it back to Valentina and running it back. But That's the issue, right?
What if something happens and Maia wins? Now Andrade is just kind of sitting there waiting because now she's in La La Land. But then you got Cynthia Calvillo saying, hey, hold on. I did the same thing. I went up and I beat the number one contender because remember, Jessica, I was number one when Cynthia beat her. So she's like, hold up. Let's not get too crazy. I did it too. So I think your job is to get people to fight the champion, right? You build people to go to a champ, especially a dominant champion like Valentina. So now you have two viable contenders or three if you include Jennifer Maia. Do you knock one off by putting them together or do you make them fight in line with each other? And the one that's most impressive, let them fight for the championship. I think anytime you have a former champ going up and they look good, they should kind of cut the line. And I think if she fights one more time, which she probably will have to, if she looks more impressive, she'll be the one to get the title fight. And I, well, and Cynthia's a teammate, right? Like, and I'm not, I'm just trying to be as unbiased as I can be.
That's what, you know what? That's what we appreciate about you. Your unbiased nature. I mean, you just tell like it is.
I try to be.
Hey, shout out to Jimmy Crute, Mateus Gamrot. And I was enjoying hearing you and Hardy and Gooden say Kutataladze. That was a tremendous fight. And shout out to him for being as honest as he was in the post-fight interview and saying that he didn't deserve. He was hard on himself. I scored it for Gamrot, but you know I appreciate that.
I did too. I thought down the stretch Gamrot won the fight. I thought he did. I thought he won the fight mid-second round and the third round. But it wasn't so bad that he should have been in the middle of the octagon. Oh, this is your fight. I get it.
I respect it. Dude, that was cool. That was cool of him.
That was cool. But dude took home an extra 50 grand. And like I said the other day, it's much easier to be that hard on yourself when you're the guy standing there as the winner.
Sure.
Because if he would have looked at that, if he'd have lost and he'd have went back and looked at how close that fight was, he'd have been very upset that he didn't get the decision. So I think there's just a lot of emotions whenever you get done with a fight. And that's what you saw on Saturday from him.
Shout out to Jun Yeon Park. Shout out to Saeed Nurmagomedov, who had a great win to kick off the night. And by the way, shout out to Teofimo Lopez,
Teofimo Lopez
had a big win over Lomachenko. Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you know who else? You know who else? Jillian Robertson looked fantastic. Jillian Robertson,
my fellow Canadian. Yeah. Yep. Once
again, shout out to Jillian Robertson. Man, she looked good. Man, she is really becoming very, very viable in this weight class, and she has the right mentality. She does not want to be rushed. She's like, I want to take my time and work myself up, and had a very good call out in mind. In Antonina Shevchenko. That's one thing that these young fighters don't get. Jonathan Martinez is the real deal. And I knew he wasn't going to like give me a name, but imagine on the off chance that he did, he could be just like Jillian Robertson, because you know what? Mick Maynard's going to go, you know, it makes sense. And he's going to consider it at least. So these young fighters have to make sure they know what they want to try to get next.
And finally, shout out to Gooden and Hardy. I thought you three made a great team. You were the one of these things is not like the other with the two Englishmen, but you guys flowed very nicely in there. It was a lot of fun to hear. It was a lot of fun.
Especially when they say their words, right? Gooden said a couple words and I was like, ooh.
Cheeky.
Cheeky. That's one that I love. And then he said another word for fit. He said he looks in some sort of form. And I thought that I was like, wow, John Gooden, what is that? I was like, what is that word? He said some word, the guy's in good, like, fever or something like that. It was crazy.
I love John Gooden. Great guy. Great guy. An ultimate mensch. Now, in 30 seconds, DC, we're going to talk about the big Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier news. But first.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All right, DC, let's talk as you wipe yourself down over there.
Hey, I'm going to tell you something. These new lights that I got.
With your $20.
Hey, these new lights that I got, compliments of the number one fighting organization in the entire world, the UFC. Mm-hmm. They are hot though. I mean, it looks good, but I mean, it is hot. I'm in a furnace in here.
It's hot under those lights, DC, as you
it's
know.
It's hot under those lights.
This is prime time. And you know who else is big time? You know who else is prime time? Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier. It looks like we have a deal, DC. Now, here's the latest. Last week, Conor says, all right, I'm in. January 23rd. All right, well, let's do it. Finally, let's go. Let's finally fight. But one caveat, one stipulation I want to add, I want to do this at Jerry's World, AT&T Stadium, Arlington, Texas. Right now, Texas is saying we will have up to 50% of an arena. So let's just say for football, I did the math, AT&T Stadium, home of the Dallas Cowboys, holds up to 80,000 people. For a fight, you know, conceivably you could say 100,000, right? Because you put the ring or the cage in the middle and you have people on the field, right? So that's more people. So let's just say 50% of 100,000 is around 50,000. So in Connor's mind, he's like, hey, I'm coming back. I want fans, big business, blah, 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 blah. All right. Now, as of right this second, you see, there's no signed bout agreement. There's no done deal per se. There's still talk, you know, Dustin's still talk, but it looks like we're moving in the right direction. How do you feel about where things ended up with A, Connor saying yes, but saying yes 3 months after the Khabib and Gaethje fight? So he's not necessarily in line with the championship fight, and then saying, hey, I want this to be at AT&T Stadium, which, by the way, Dana White said on Friday, I'm not going anywhere where we can't have 100% capacity. And oh, by the way, Jerry Jones himself said, I'd love to have Connor fight at my stadium.
Well, first off, let me get to point number one. Love that they're agreeing to the fight and agreeing to do the fight in the UFC. Love the idea of getting fans back into a venue, into a place to watch fights. Scares me that the idea comes from the athlete. I think a lot of times, I don't understand a lot of times where the disconnect and the fight is between Connor and the UFC. And I'm talking in regards to give me these dates in November, December, now January. It just always seems like every time there's something, there has to be a bit of a factor that's going to cause some discontent. And I don't understand how it keeps happening. Now, if you can fit 50,000 people, Dana told me this a long time ago, I want to fill the arena when I do. But man, if you can get 50,000 people in there, that's bigger than any fight we've ever had outside of GSP in Canada, right? Or the one in Melbourne, there was 60,000 people there. It seems like it would make sense. But here's the problem. Like, we don't even understand all the logistics, all the logistical things that go into making these fights, right? So that's a conversation that's above you and I to figure how they make it happen.
Well, can I respond to the first thing that you said? You said, like, you don't really understand the level of discontent or why they continue to butt heads. I'll give you a brief history lesson why this is. Yeah. So it really started around the time Conor was supposed to fight Jose Aldo, wanted a big contract for that. There was some back and forth. And then you recall after he beat Eddie Alvarez in the next fight at the post-fight press conference, he was talking about more money. He was talking about equity. He was talking about X, Y, and Z. Now, at the end of the day, they always figure it out. Why? Because they're very smart businessmen, both entities, right? They stand to make a lot of money when they're on the same page, i.e. Mayweather McGregor, Khabib McGregor, things of that nature. But what happens here is the UFC has never dealt with anyone like Conor McGregor before. And what I mean by that is someone who is arguably, let's not get all crazy here, I'm just saying arguably bigger than the brand itself, right? Conor McGregor is the first ever, I'm saying arguably, Conor McGregor is-
But I don't even know if you can argue that though. I don't think you can argue that. Because what? If you say someone is bigger than the brand, arguably, then the brand kind of falters and stops whenever that person isn't available. The brand has just continued down the same path. So you can't say arguably bigger than the brand when the brand just continues to go.
No, let me explain. Conor McGregor does a pay-per-view by himself right now. By himself, not in conjunction with the UFC, by himself. He's probably the only fighter on the roster, and Khabib might be very close as well at this point, all credit due, who can make his own pay-per-view under whatever banner, Mayweather, McGregor promotions, whatever, and still get up to a million pay-per-views. I don't know if anyone else, that's what I mean by that. And so historically, the UFC has always been the dominant brand. And so they try to keep, so when Conor comes out and says, move the date, they're like, no, because now you're setting a very dangerous precedent. When he says, let me pick the venue, now you're setting a dangerous precedent. So it's this constant one-upmanship where it's like, anything you say, I'm going to go above it. Back forth they go. And that's why you see this butting of the heads. But again, at the end of the day, they always figure it out because there's money to be made. But I think that's why you're seeing it.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Are you certain? You said a million pay-per-view buys. You understand what a million pay-per-view buys is?
Yes.
I mean, do you know the number to Cowboy versus Conor? Because if you can find the number to Cowboy versus Conor, the amount of pay-per-views sold, that tells you where it stands. Because if the UFC and Conor McGregor together do a certain number of pay-per-view buys, he's not going to do more by himself, right? So I think that's where, because I feel like that was the first time Conor was headlining a card against someone that wasn't in the absolute prime of their career. I think that every other pay-per-view Conor has headlined, Jose Aldo, Eddie Alvarez, Habib, and whoever else, they were in the absolute prime of their career, right? Let's see what he did against a cowboy who wasn't in the prime of his career. Over and also, and has name recognition. Cowboy has name recognition. But how did he do with Cowboy? Because when he left, if he's to leave the UFC and do his own pay-per-view, he has to do it with a name like that, right? Because you don't have the Habibs and you don't have the Aldos. You don't have the Alvarezes. You don't really have those guys out there to go and main event a pay-per-view with.
Well, okay, now we're getting off on a tangent. The point is he's not.
No, I'm just saying, though, like, but you said that you could still do a million pay-per-views. Yes. That's a big number. That's a massive number.
And I think, by the way, that him versus Poirier, if promoted, you know, aggressively, which it will be, and if he would have fought in July as well, could have done 2 million. That's how big.
Him and Poirier, you think, are going to do 2 million pay-per-view buys.
If they would have done them in July when there were no sports going on, if they would have done Conor versus
anyone.
They could have done 2 million.
Yes.
Now let's see what's going to happen, you know, what the landscape is like, what else is going on in January, NFL playoffs, if they're still going on, all that
stuff. That's a lot of pay-per-views, Ariel.
The UFC is on fire, my man. I don't know if you heard, but the UFC is on fire, thanks in large part to the launch of this show. I mean, it's really in conjunction with the launch of the show. Everything has changed. But here's the point, DC. Let me be very clear before anyone calls me, you know, crazy and a Conor shill and all this stuff. The UFC won this battle. There is no questions. They got their date. They got their man to come back. They got the fight. The only thing that I think isn't a pro in their favor is the timeline. Because to me, having Conor fight closer to Khabib versus Gaethje would have made a lot more sense for multiple reasons. Number one, you want him fighting in conjunction with the belt because ultimately we know they want Khabib versus Conor, right? That's the biggest fight they could put on. And number two, we know that Ramadan is coming up in early April of 2021. April, I think, 12th to be exact.
Then he's out.
Well, exactly. So you have to, if you want Khabib to fight before, you need to get him in there before April 12th. And if Conor is fighting January 23rd, it's a 14 Saturday window to try to get them, you know, to come back. So now here's the thing I want to ask you, DC. Is it possible that they haven't officially booked this fight? Let's say Khabib runs through Gaethje. Let's say he wins in the first round, right? Do they call the audible and try to make Conor versus Khabib in early 2021? Is it possible that Poirier gets, you know, left on the side?
I got to be honest with you. I had a conversation with Khabib the other day about everything.
Yeah.
And I thought there was no way that he would not want to fight Conor again. I thought he would definitely do it. But after speaking to him, I'm starting to get the idea that he doesn't want to do it. And I don't know if they're going to be able to make him. Like, I'm being honest with you. Like, I'm starting to really feel now that he just kind of doesn't want any part of it. And that to me is scary, right? Before I thought, all right, you know, sure, say you won't fight him, but then go beat a guy. I think you should because you already won. You make a ton of money as a friend. It makes sense. But I just don't know if he's going to do it, Eric. I was talking to him the other day, and
what was his reason?
He just wants to focus on, obviously, Justin Gaethje. That's the task at hand. But I just don't know if it's a lot. And it was a lot last time, right? It was the bus incident with the Dolly. It was all the negative things said about the family and the religion. And it was just a lot. And I just don't know but honestly, even if they fight each other again, it elevates both of them. And Conor elevated Khabib to a level. He gained 10 million followers by fighting Conor McGregor. So, like, let's not act like he didn't get elevated by Conor. But I just think that it's such a massive fight that it does help both. And I don't know if he wants to, I don't know if he wants to do business with him anymore. Because ultimately, it's a business and we're making money together. And I don't know if he wants to do business with him.
Yeah, I think ultimately if he wins, I mean, it depends on if he wants to retire really at 30. He beats Gaethje, and then if he tells the UFC, I'm done at 30, I think then they try to make the GSP fight because now you're not afraid of GSP beating him and walking away. Now you can capitalize off the guy who beat Khabib, but if he's done regardless, it doesn't matter. So now let us talk about Khabib because it is coming up 5 days away from one of the biggest fights of 2020, the long-awaited return of Khabib Nurmagomedov. And, you know, he fights almost once a year now. And honestly, it's like distance makes the heart grow fonder. It feels like a really big deal. And I want to remind everyone at home, especially in North America, because I keep getting texts and tweets about this. Yes, the main card is at 2 p.m. Eastern. The pay-per-view main card begins at 2 p.m. Eastern, much like it did last year when he fought Dustin Poirier in Abu Dhabi. Khabib is big business in the Middle East, so they want him fighting in prime time over there in Abu Dhabi. It makes total sense, but for us here in America, it's at 2 p.m. Eastern. Have you seen Khabib yet? I know he was in Dubai. Have you seen him now face-to-face yet? And if so, what is he like?
Or even just when you're messaging, like? Just on FaceTime, you know, talking to him and stuff, but I haven't seen him in person. He's still in quarantine. Dustin Gaethje is still in quarantine. Both guys are now in the hotel and both in quarantine, but I can feel it as an analyst, as a commentator. I can feel the enormity of the event because the hotel seems to be buzzing now. I can feel it. I can feel that people are on edge for something big. And you felt it when Zombie and Ortega fought. But, you know, when you get to the final event on this Fight Island run, and it's this type of event with the biggest star in this region, right? Khabib is big business in the Middle East, like you said. And it shows by the time slot because they are not accommodating the American audience on this one, right? They're taking care of the people here, which is what's it's what matters. And it's big. I haven't saw him, but I've spoken to him. Text message. He's got a great setup in his room. He showed me today. Got his bike, got his mats. He's got every treadmill. Everything's ready to go.
I want you to go back to May after Justin Gaethje beat Ferguson. And on the Monday after, I'll remind people, I said, if that Gaethje shows up, it will be the toughest fight that Khabib has ever had. Now, you know, I don't talk to Khabib like you do. I'm just watching from afar. But I feel like he is zoned in on a different level. I feel like he is a man on a mission. And by the way, I want to give a shout out to our friends over at BT Sport for that amazing promo that they put out yesterday, man, about him and his father. I've watched it maybe 40 times. I teared up watching it. It's beautiful, truly beautiful. And we know about the relationship with him and his late father, Abdulmanap. But can you tell us, like, because to me, it seems like this man, he's always unflappable. He's always, like, super determined. But it feels like he is on a different level in terms of mission. And you have to side with him. I still think Gaethje will give him his toughest fight in the UFC. Mm-hmm. But, man, I'm very curious to see what this Khabib looks like because it seems like he is just locked in.
Well, I was watching, obviously, talking to him. I feel like he's locked in. But he's always locked in. But when you have a guy that sets a idea and a goal that him and his dad set, right? That's why the 30-0 stands out to everybody because that was the number. That was the number that they wanted to get to, 30-0. And Khabib was always the one that said, 30-0, I will be retired from the game, right? But this is something that he wanted, and they kind of set that number in their minds. So now that's another source of motivation for this man as his father has gone away. So if that's the case, that makes him even more dangerous because before he was fighting to make his father proud, make his family and team proud and everybody and become a world champion. But now he's fighting in his dad's honor too, right? Mm-hmm. So there's another level of motivation. But I'm going to tell you one thing that I saw in Countdown that Justin Gaethje said that was very interesting. Justin said, I go into my gym to get beat up every day. He said, I feel like Khabib is surrounded by all of his friends. They all tell him he's the best in the world, and they're not trying to beat him up every day. He goes, I don't allow anybody to call me the best in the world. I don't allow them to call me number one. I don't. Justin Gaethje does not accept that type of adoration because he wants to be one of the guys that you try to take your head off every time. He doesn't feel like Khabib is getting that. Now, I'll tell you, from my own experiences, we try to beat him up. Guys try to beat him up when he's in the practice room. But Gaethje's seeing something in him that's giving him confidence. And is it false? Is this something that he's making up for his own good? I don't know. But that was interesting, man. And if he really believes that, this dude's going to go at him like you wouldn't believe. And you said if the guy that showed up in May shows up, no doubt in my mind that that's the Justin Gaethje that shows up on Saturday night.
Yeah, and he has, you know, one of the best coaches in the game, Trevor Whitman, from an IQ standpoint, from a game plan standpoint, in his corner.
Ariel,
I love
created
that.
A position for him. We created a position for Trevor Whitman, right? A coach that sits next to the octagon so that you bring in every now and again for him to give detail into the corner and the way the fight's going, the game plan. And, like, the UFC has such a created a position for Trevor. That's how smart he is.
By the way, I have to ask you, I'd be remiss if I don't ask you. We found out yesterday, unfortunately, for the third time, Umar Nurmagomedov's UFC debut is going to have to wait. He's out. Apparently he has, so there was some concern. we found out afterwards that it was a staph infection, but Khabib and the rest of the team, are they okay? Because we heard flu-like symptoms and whatnot. Obviously, people were a little concerned about Khabib's health as well. So do you have an update on Umar? And
No, I haven't asked. I didn't even ask him about any of that.
I text Umar,
told him that I hope he feels better. But like, I didn't ask Khabib if he's feeling sick. And honestly, Khabib's on schedule to fight. And you got a COVID test yesterday and would have gotten the result today. So if something was wrong, you would start to hear whispers about it. So I think he's fine.
Okay. All right. Chill out. Jeez. Don't have to get all aggressive about it.
I'm not being aggressive.
Hey, how do you feel? This is the first time you're calling a Khabib fight. What is that like for you? First of all, how's it going to be? Even like for the fighter meeting, are you going to sit there with Gaethje? Isn't that a little weird?
No. When Justin comes in for his fighter meeting, I'm going to leave. I think it's respectful. I would not. I feel like it's not fair to Justin for me to sit in and hear about his game plan, because why would I do that? Why would even just the thought of that floating around out there that I could potentially take that to Khabib is not right. So I'm going to get out. I'm going to sit out. I'm going to shake his hand and give him a hug, because Justin Gaethje is a gentleman and one of the best guys that you'll ever meet. And I'll let those guys go through the interview with him. And then I'm going to go about my business and do my work later. I just think it's fair to Justin to excuse myself whenever he's doing that.
I don't think it will happen because he is so good, one of the greatest of all time. But what have you thought about how difficult it will be if Khabib doesn't show up, if he loses?
Yeah, no.
What is that going to be like for you? If you have to be critical of his, like, what if the first round he doesn't show up? You know what I mean?
No, I have to do my job. You know, this is my job. And my bosses, Zach Candido, Craig Borsari, they all have confidence in me and my ability to call this fight down the line. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to call this fight right down the line. Now, am I going to have to deal with some inner nerves? Yeah, because I get nervous when the guy fights. I've seen him fight now 15 times or 13 times. He came to AKA 15-0. He's been with us for 13 straight fights. And generally when he's fighting, I'm yelling. Right? Let's go, Khabib. Come on, baby, let's go. You know, like, I'm usually doing that, whereas this time, I can't do that. I have to call this fight, but I believe that the Ron Wynn fights that I've called has kind of helped me to prepare for this moment. Now, if he loses, it'll be the same type of situation like we've had before. You know, one of Paul Felder's good friends got beat in the octagon, and we covered him, right? When Deron Wynn lost, they covered me until I was able to gather myself and continue to do my job. But if Justin Gaethje goes out there and gets the job done, I will congratulate him on doing something that nobody thought that he could do. And I will finish my job, and then I will console my friend, as those guys have done for me every time I've lost a fight, because he's been there. You know, he's been there when I've lost fights, and they've done a good job of kind of helping me get through those moments.
Well, it feels like a big deal. You also get Robert Whittaker versus Jared Cannonier with a potential number one contender spot on the line. Some big names. Yes, we've lost some names as well, but it feels like a big card again. 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Plus pay-per-view if you're here in America. It's the return of your boy, Ewan. Have you seen Ewan? He's on the
card. I haven't. I'm purposely avoiding Kuti Laba. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not avoiding him. I just haven't seen him. Like, I don't go anywhere, bro. I seriously sit in my room unless I go to eat.
I want to see a little video game action between you and Ewan. I mean, after all that you said.
Oh, my
said,
goodness.
Let's not forget, just to remind people, you said you were going to leave him off the charter back in March. All right, let's just.
Come on. Look, you do it again.
Remind people.
You I constantly remind, do this. I definitely wanted to bring Ewan on the charter.
No.
I definitely said, wanted to bring him on the charter.
I said there was no change.
I hope that these guys finally fight, right? Ankalaev and Kuti Laba, like, they've been scheduled, what, 5 times? This is like Ferguson versus Khabib. They've been scheduled so many times, and it's never happened. I hope they actually fight.
I hope he made the charter.
When Ewan comes into his fighter meeting, I'm going to make sure they video it so you can see us come together.
Yes.
And all your fantasies of us fighting and not getting along is going to be ruined.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Listen,
I mean,
they did the test and they realized that people were more inclined to use the code Ariel. It's an easier name to remember than DC.
I mean, just so there one.
Now, DC, we got to get down. We got to get down to brass tacks here. We got to get down. There I am. You're hobnobbing with everyone on Fight Island. You're playing video games. You're riding bikes.
Yes.
Wrestling people in the lobby. You're doing all kinds of great things. Me, your boy for life, loyal friend for life, is on the front lines taking bullets for you, DC, from Paul Heyman. Last week, Paul Heyman said a lot of things about you. Now, here is your time. Finally, people have been dying to hear your response. He said that you are not a draw, that all you do is pick on Paul Heyman guys because you try to get the rub because you were never a draw. You couldn't even cut it as a broadcaster. You are not the biggest athlete in combat sports. It's Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. All that. In fact, DC, in case you missed it, here's a quick reminder of what Paul Heyman had to say about you.
You think I have a beef with Daniel? I don't have a beef with Daniel Cormier. One, do I really believe that Brock Lesnar is a bigger deal in the combat sports world than Daniel Cormier? I don't think Daniel Cormier made in his entire career what Brock Lesnar made per fight. Number two, it wasn't Brock Lesnar calling out Daniel Cormier. It was Daniel Cormier continuing to call out Brock Lesnar both in Las Vegas and at Madison Square Garden because Cormier needed the celebrity rub. I don't know how close UFC was willing to put together the right deal to entice Brock Lesnar to step back into the cage and knock out or tap out Daniel Cormier in the first round. But let's be real about Daniel Cormier against Roman Reigns. And erasing you from history is something that Roman Reigns can do, especially when he's guided by his senior counsel, Paul Heyman.
He said a lot more. I know you've seen the clip. The floor is yours. Your response to Paul Heyman. And wipe that smile off your face. This is serious business, DC.
It's mad disrespectful. Paul Heyman's disrespectful. Now, he talks about box office, and he talks about the Paul Heyman guy and Paul Heyman this and that. If Paul Heyman is so valuable and these guys are so valuable, why do they have to run to him? Why do they always have to become Paul Heyman guys? I don't need my name to be carried by some other guy. I don't need a manager. I don't need, hey, it's not Ariel in DC. I'm not a Helwani guy. It's DC and Helwani, right? Because my name also draws. We'll talk about Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar's a Paul Heyman guy. I'm going to an undisclosed location. Well, you're going to the undisclosed location to find the plan to keep your clients safe. They're trying to figure out a way to keep them away from DC. Because if I get my hands on either of those guys, either of them, it's over. Brock Lesnar dodged a bullet in the UFC. He does not want me going over there. And Brock has wrestling ability. He's an NCAA champion. You're right, Paul Heyman. But if I get my hands on Roman Reigns, a football player, how in the world is that guy going to be able to defend himself? Ariel, this is an unfair fight. This is an unfair fight. And Heyman does draw. People were in the comments talking about him. But if there were 1,500 comments, there were 1,400 of those comments telling you, Paul Heyman, to be careful with the battles that you pick, because this is one that you cannot win, and neither can either of your clients.
You know, I was going to say, for the first time in his life, Paul Heyman has written a few checks that he can't cash. But let's be honest. DC, if you know about ECW, Paul Heyman, that man wrote a lot of checks he can't cash. I mean,
he always get beat up. That's all he does, would get beat up.
No, he was writing checks, and people, there was no money in the account. This is a failed businessman telling us, DC, telling us, the biggest stars at ESPN, how to run a business. Are you kidding me? Paul Heyman, relevant back in what, 1998, when he was doing shows out of a bingo hall, is going to tell us about drawing numbers? Are you kidding me?
Ariel, Paul Heyman's talking about, he was like, oh, you're going to use my promo from ECW. And I was like, what is ECW, Paul Heyman? Like, I mean, come on. The one business that he ran, I never heard of.
Yeah,
I mean, I never heard of it.
It used to be on 1 a.m. on public access TV.
It was on public access television. You came on right after the program where you had a minute before the next product was going off the channel. I can't remember what it was even called. I mean, the Home Shopping Network. Did he play on the Home Shopping Network? ECW. What's ECW? I mean, come on, Heyman. He had to hitch his cart to the WWE to become relevant again. I didn't run to the biggest organization. They pursued me. I was down to Strikeforce living good. I was fine. I was the champion of that organization, and I had many people showing up to watch me fight. I fought in front of 10,000 at the Shark Tank in San Jose. I fought in front of 9,000 in Oklahoma City. I was doing fine. The UFC came and they got me because they understood my value. I didn't run to the WWE like you did, Heyman. Dude's got to watch himself. He's playing a very dangerous game right now.
I don't know if you heard that. I don't know if you heard that right there. That's actually the sound of Paul Heyman getting fired from another role at WWE, because every 6 months they put him in a position and he gets fired again and again and again.
Heyman, we need you to run Raw. Oh, yeah, that lasted very long. Wait, what are we going to do next? Bring back Eric Bischoff? I mean, how many guys are they going to try before they realize that if you really want it to be successful, hire me and Ariel, because everything we do seems to work. Hence our show already being one of the top five shows on ESPN. Let me tell you something, man. You want to talk about winners? This is the winner's circle. And I'm surprised that you even did him the favor or the honor of having him on your show. You gave him the
I didn't think he'd go there. I didn't think he'd go there, to be honest.
I mean, he tried to tell me, you're welcome. I'm welcome. No, he should be thankful for you for allowing him the platform to be seen by so many people. Because we both know right now, not many people are watching him wrestle and do what he's doing.
Is, Lesnar is irrelevant. He was talking about the fact that he took some punches, you know, from Mark Hunt. The one mistake I made wasn't, you know, reminding everyone that he used a couple enhancers to take those punches, if you get what I'm saying. And now he has hitched his wagon to Roman Reigns, who's out there, last I heard, beating up tag team guys who weigh 150 pounds. I mean, come on. Like what is that? Now you're going to say that DC can't headline WrestleMania? Are you kidding me? Come on now.
When you have pretended to be a good guy for so long as Roman Reigns has, we are finally seeing the true Roman Reigns beating up on his cousins. When all they want is to be seen by their big cousin, the tribal warrior. Oh, that's what you came up with? That's a Heyman idea. I'm the tribal warrior. I'm tough. Let me get my hands on the tribal warrior. I'll be running that entire family. I'll be running that entire family, Helwani. Let me get my hands on this guy.
Yeah, why don't they pop in the tape from May of 2011? No, 2012. Pop in the tape from May of 2012 at the Shark Tank.
Give Josh Barnett that move. I mean, boom, flip him right through the air. Saw what happened to the last professional wrestler that I fought? I mean, you know, Josh is a professional wrestler that can fight. Imagine me getting my hands on these guys that are used to performing. It'd be over. It'd be very, very bad for them.
It's all good. Look, the one good thing that came from that whole situation, we kind of push Mr. Booker T old, we push Harlem Cole Booker off T. to the side.
Hey Booker T, the problem with DC is he wants to talk about this guy. Hey Booker T, guess what? We're not the only ones talking. Paul Heyman wants to hit. He wants to get with Ariel and I, right? You want to make money. You want box office. You involve Ariel and I, Booker T. That little podcast that they do down in Houston, the numbers have skyrocketed since they started to try and pick
25,
us.
25. I mean,
Ariel, they had 25 listeners. They're now about
35,
100. They're at 100 listeners. I mean, they were doing this. I mean, we have given them four times the listeners weekly because, is this the hand sign of one of the greatest factions in wrestling history? If I wanted, I could resurrect this faction too and then really take over the WWE.
Hey, Hunter, or is it Paul? Which is it? It depends on who's, you know, kissing your ass, calling you Hunter or Paul. Hey, get your house in order, all right? Get your house in order, because it seems like all your guys are trying to come after us. We're just here talking about real fighting, all right? We're here talking about big deals, UFC 254. We're talking about real fighting. Get your house in order.
I'm over here doing my job. I retired. But it's like they all want to take shots, right? Conor wants to take a shot. Jan wants to take a shot. Paul Heyman wants to take a shot. Booker T wants to take a shot. Booker T's little sidekick wants to take a shot. They all want a shot. Eventually, you're going to get what you're asking for. And it ain't fun. Hey, a whole bunch of guys realize it ain't fun when you locked in there with me. Trust me.
It's like a wise man once said, push me now,
go to sleep later. He dodged it. He dodged a bullet once.
I feel like we could have delivered that one a little bit better. It was push me now, get slept later, right? I feel like we could.
Push me now, get slept later, Lesnar.
That's what I'm talking about.
This is the only one you get, Lesnar. He dodged it back then. If he doesn't slow down, he's going to end up getting what he was supposed to get back then.
Yeah, call him on his rotary phone wherever he is on a farm in Saskatchewan.
He's hidden somewhere in Canada. Hey, yeah. He ran to the safest place in the world. Everybody talks about how tough Brock Lesnar is. Hey, what about the mean streets of San Jose or Gilroy where I live? What about the mean streets of Gilroy, California? I mean, Westland, Oregon, like the American gangster says, America, where it gets tough. He went to Canada. I mean, it's safe in Canada. Right? You don't even have to lock your door. Hey, in Canada, you don't have to lock your door at night. Brock Lesnar doesn't lock his door. He leaves his car doors open in the driveway.
Weak.
It's so safe out there. Come on, man.
Yellow.
Come back to the U.S.
Spineless. That's right.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right. Well, that's that. Enough of those guys. We got to go. Time to wrap. Hey, nope. Also, that's it. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Wow. What a show.
Just like that. Here you are trying to pull me back in like Brian Ortega, but I say no. I say no. Hey, shout out to Chris Cyborg, by the way, for getting her first ever submission this past Thursday. She continues to do big things. We'll see if Katsingano is next for her. We know who is next for Khabib Nurmagomedov and Justin Gaethje. It's them. This Saturday, UFC 254. Can't wait. You're calling the fights, and then you're coming home, right? Back home next week?
I'm coming home next week, man. I got to figure out how to get back to Gilroy before we do our show. But if not, I will park myself in the hotel, do the show, then head back to my children and my wife. I miss them so much. I can't wait.
That's the kind of commitment that you have to this program and why we work so well together. So
This is my priority number one every week now. You know that. This is priority number one.
You're all in. Hashtag all in.
Took long enough.
Have a great week in Abu Dhabi. If anyone asks about me, you know, just tell them I say hi and I miss them all dearly. And hopefully we'll see them. We'll see each other soon.
Is there anything better than John Gooden saying Abu Dhabi? What is Abu Dhabi? And welcome tonight from Abu Dhabi. I love John Gooden. He's the best. He's like
best bow ties in the game.
Tonight, good morning from Abu Dhabi on Fight Island. Like those guys are the best. Dan Hardy standing the whole time. I mean, maybe I just want to work with the English crew the whole time. Maybe this is my new wheelhouse.
It was great.
I got my boy Anik this week, though. We back.
All right. So thank you to Manscaped. Thank you to DraftKings. Thanks to all of you. Please continue to rate, download, subscribe, and review. Do the things that you do. It's the only thing we ask of you so that we can continue to climb those charts, if you will. Enjoy the fights this weekend. Again, it's in the afternoon, 2 p.m. Eastern. Back next week. Same time and place. Until then, we say peace. We're out of here.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.